Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson, always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, if you listen often enough, you know that we have our good friend Dr. Troy Sproul on the show once a month to talk health and the healing process. Today, we're going to talk about gut health and the gut-brain connection. This is from the Harvard Medical School's website. Listen to this. The gut-brain connection is no joke. It can link anxiety to stomach problems and vice versa. Have you ever had a gut-wrenching experience? Do certain situations make you feel nauseous? Have you ever felt butterflies in your stomach? We use these expressions for a reason. The gastrointestinal tract is sensitive to emotion. Anger, anxiety, sadness, elation, all of these feelings and others can trigger symptoms in the gut. So we're going to spend the first few minutes talking gut-brain health. The phone lines are open. If you call right away, you'll just need to sit on hold for just a little bit because Doc and I are going to have a conversation. But you've got questions about health and the healing process. The reason we do this is, Dr. Troy is the expert. I did work in the fitness industry about 15 years, lots of years ago. And I have a similar passion. It's just that he's the expert. But we share the passion of seeing people healthy, seeing people healed. And I would say we both believe with all of our hearts that God plays a part and you play a part. And even today, there are choices you can make, adjustments you can make to build your immunities, to reduce your stress, to change your outlook, tweaks that can make the world of difference in your health. If you've got questions, and even if you're a little shy about getting on the air, you can be anonymous. Ryan will just be happy even to pass the question on to me if you don't want to get on the air. 877-933-2484. You can text the question or call in the question. A quick caveat before we get Dr. Troy on, and I have to say this every month, he's not here to diagnose you over the airwaves. His advice is not meant to take the place of your physician. So we're always asking you, consult your doctor before making any changes to your health program as it relates to medicines you might be on. I mean, you can start today by drinking more water, cutting back sugar, getting to bed on time. I think I'm safe to say you don't have to talk to your doctor about that. Get to bed on time. Drink your water, right?
Right, Doc? That's right. Yes.
So quick announcement before we get Dr. Troy on is I'm super excited. Next Thursday night, we're doing a live stream event. Dr. Troy and I will talk about how to win the fear and worry battle. You're not going to believe some of the fun giveaways that we have. So it's just going to be so fun. We're going to talk about how do you win that fear worry battle. So many people are afraid and anxious, but then we've got some amazing gifts to give away as well. It will be a live stream event that you'll see on YouTube. And the way that you'll access it is through our website, myfaithradio.com. But you won't see info until next Thursday. So I'll be talking about it, but at least right now, mark your calendar next Thursday night, 7 p.m. Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Troy Sproul is CEO and founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing. It's located in Eagan, Minnesota. He loves God, and he's passionate about health and the healing process. He's an award-winning doctor. There's so much more to him than I could tell you, but he's a great friend of the show. Dr. Troy, welcome back.
Thanks. I'm actually here.
Yay. Yeah, we've been all working remotely, but we are keeping our distance, but it's so fun to be in studio. So we are several feet apart. Kim, our producer, we're several feet apart. Ryan is in the next studio taking calls. We're being very careful, but it is awesome to get the band back together.
Yes.
Just saying. So tell me this, if you've got a verse you could share with us.
Yes, this comes from James. It is James 1, Trials and Temptations to the 12 tribes scattered among the nations. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind.
Wow, say more about that.
Well, I know you might think that that has more to speak about the times we're in, but it doesn't. This is more of when I was doing some work on temptations when I was thinking about food and working with my patients that deal with food. This is an area I go to quite a bit. And so a lot of our addictions that we have are a nice little combination between the brain and the gut. And the imbalances that occur between that communication is what leads to the addictions and the cravings, if you will. And we crave a lot of things, and food is way up on that list for most people.
Wow, interesting. Well, you know, Harvard Medical School says we should pay close attention to that gut-brain connection, and it contributes to our emotional health and our physical health. Say a word, even our ability to digest food. So, in other words, what could be going on in our brain might affect our gut, and what's going on in our gut might affect our brain. So talk about that.
Yeah, I actually have a chapter in my book called The Two-Way Street, and that's what it's talking about.
Interesting.
And so it is a two-way street when it comes to communication, and a breakdown in communication, it's got to be flowing back and forth on both sides all the time for us to feel optimal. And if you start to get a little bit of a problem in one area, it will eventually affect the other area. So it doesn't matter if it starts as a stressor. And we've all seen examples. People know that if you have really, really strong acute stress, you can develop an ulcer. So that's an extreme example of mental stress affecting the digestive system. But not a lot of people know that if you eat an inflammatory diet, that can cause anxiety or depression or sleep disorders. And we see that much, much more commonly. It's just not recognized.
Wow. And then we go to medicine right away to try to treat the symptoms. And there is a place for medicine, definitely. But we are clearly an over-medicated people. That's proven on both sides of this argument. So I have a loved one who doesn't really experience digestive issues when she eats grains, but she immediately gets anxious and depressed. She said there is a direct connection. So she's gone paleo, basically. She's kind of grain-free, and she's like, I'm not deprived. You know, there's cookbooks out there now of grain-free cooking that she eats so much great stuff. But talk about that, because that's the other piece. I don't know that if people feel like, well, I don't get really a gut ache when I eat it. There are so many other implications. So what would be other things maybe they would look at?
Yeah, actually, most people who have digestive disorders that affect the brain don't have any digestive symptoms. In fact, even with autoimmunity, 30% of people with autoimmune disease have what's called silent autoimmunity, which means they have silent digestive symptoms. With all autoimmunity, though, there's a couple variables that are usually there. Vitamin D is usually deficient, and some form of leaky or inflamed gut. Hmm. And so it's a confused immune system response with the majority. And so silent autoimmunity or the digestive component to that is pretty common for a lot of people. So they will see it as brain fog. They will see it as headaches. They will see it as fatigue or lethargy, waking up feeling more tired. They'll see it as anxiety or depression. And a lot of times they'll see it as muscle aches and pains before they feel it as digestive disorder.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah. And again, I want to say this with the caveat, do not go off any meds without the care of your doctor. That's my caveat. But to the question, if let's say some of your anxiety and depression is related to your diet, you know, I'm pretty honest about this. About 25 years ago, I went through mild depression after just an accumulation of really, really painful stuff. Lyme disease was a big part of it. Babies in the hospital, it caught up with me. So I was on a mild antidepressant for a year, and I was determined to get off. I went to counseling once a week, and my counselor's like, you're doing this the way I wish everybody else would, because the medicine helped me give me the emotional bandwidth to sort through the incredible sadness I felt. But I'm like, I'm not going to just prop myself up and go on. I got to look at what got me here, because I'm determined to get off. But I've heard from so many people over the years who said, you know, I need it, but it's made me gain weight, which is more depressing. I'm numbed out, so I'm not there for my family. Some people have a chemical imbalance, and that's another conversation. But for those whose issue really is dietary, and they are taking an antidepressant, which is causing other things, but all the while, their body's still saying, I don't like what you're eating, so it's going to impact them other ways. What are the implications of that? I want to just cast a vision and go, maybe, if you were wise in the care of a doctor, could wean off and adjust your diet, what could happen?
Yeah, so we work with a lot of doctors in that exact scenario, and we have a high, high success rate of getting people off the medications and still feeling good. So let me walk people through that. First of all, my personal philosophy is I'm not against medications. I'm against the improper use of medications. And if there's a natural way to address it, that we try that first. Because my filter is simple. If God made it, it's good. If man altered it, beware. Or if man made it, beware. Just be discerning. Because we're not as gifted as God. God made us very, very well when it comes to how things work, and he made us to heal. So almost always, we've done something or have experienced something in our life that's altered the communication, the natural healing and restoration that God provided for us. So if we can identify what that is, remove it, and if there's a way to fix it naturally, then we have success. If there's not, then sometimes we have to go to drugs and surgery and some of the more life-saving things from the traditional medical world. And so let me walk you through a little bit about how the medication works anyway. So a lot of the things that we see with depression and anxiety that actually help naturally come from serotonin. Serotonin is in abundance in the digestive tract.
Interesting.
And so as we have an inflammatory response in our digestive system, it will start to decrease the amount of serotonin being produced. Now, the medications, the majority of them, especially the family called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, they don't make more serotonin. What they do is they just help bind the serotonin you have in the receptor longer. So the serotonin you're using is actually having a longer effect in the brain. This is why you'll see a lot of things like antidepressants like Prozac, where they say it's more meant for short-term use. And we're actually starting to see in some of the research that after decades of use, then there's a higher incidence of, suicide with that. But it's because it doesn't actually make the serotonin. So if you don't get to the root cause of why your serotonin dropped in the first place, then you're eventually, those medications are eventually going to stop working, which is what we see. So whenever someone goes on a medication, our mindset is, how did this happen? What got in the way of your natural serotonin production? One of those factors is digestive inflammation, and that's the easiest one to identify and start to work with. And then when you start making more serotonin, then the doctor will start to wean down off of the reuptake inhibitor. And then there are other areas in the body that deal with serotonin as well. And then there's other neurotransmitters like GABA and dopamine and other things that we have to look at as well. But they all have natural places within us. And I'm going to say it this way. God made us with receptors and chemicals, and we have a $1 trillion pharmacy within us if we just learn to tap into it. And that's what we want to focus on. It's not always possible, which is why I'm very thankful for the traditional approach. But at the same time, as we've played out a lot of these antidepressants and medications, we see that they work very well in the short term, and then they start to lose their value the longer you go on, because the root cause may not have been addressed.
Yeah, that's amazing. And here again, I just want to say, we're not advocating for you to go off your meds. No. Please, please hear that. Just casting a vision for, you know, if you step back a 30,000 foot view, we're going to pause here, Kim, so you can go ahead and cue that music. There it is. But the idea is that we are at our best when we're on the least amount of medicine, but doing the best things for our body. Everybody's diet looks different, and what everybody needs and what I need to stay away from is different than what Dr. Troy needs to stay away from. That's why it's so important to discern what your deficiencies are, how you're made up. But I just want you to get a vision that you can feel your best on the least amount of medicine. It takes a long time to get there, but it is possible. Peggy asked a question from Lancaster, Minnesota about kombucha, and we are going to get that as we talk about some of the varying gut issue problems. What are the gut issues, the problems, and how can we fix them? Phone lines are open. I'll try my hardest to get to those calls. We'll just talk a few more minutes about this and we'll move on. But it's powerful how you take care of your gut, how you take care of your brain. I mean, if those things are awry, you're not going to be healthy. But if you can really take care of those things, you will know a health you didn't think was possible. Can I get an amen? Come on, somebody. 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. My word. word, that song just wants me to get up and dance. Thanks for tuning in to Middays. Is this thing on? Yeah. I'm Susie Larson. I don't know, how do you not get excited when you hear some good music like that? Well, we've got our friend Dr. Troy Spurl in. He is CEO, founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing in Eagan, Minnesota. People come from all over the place, all over the country to see him, and he's a good friend of this show. He's on every month. We're starting out, kicking off the show, talking about gut-brain health. Gut health, the gut-brain connection. Harvard Medical School says the gut and brain are so closely connected that they could easily be considered one organ. It's almost like I probably shouldn't have pitched for calls because I think we could spend the whole hour talking about this because there's stuff you can do for your brain. But if we could just dig in, and Peggy, I told you from Lancaster, we're going to talk about kombucha in just a minute. But I want to talk about some of the things that can go wrong with the gut. Leaky gut, candida, fungi, whatever, SIBO. Maybe take a couple of those and talk about the distinctions and how we heal the gut. Because is there a one-size-fits-all on how we heal the gut? Not necessarily?
No, not necessarily, because there are definitely... The only thing I would say that's a one-size-fit-all that gets closest is fasting. Fasting, and the only people that really struggle with fasting are the ones who get who have reactive hypoglycemia or hypoglycemia, low blood sugar. So it's still generally healthy for everyone to fast at some point, for the most part. Now, if you're on medications or other things that artificially drop your blood sugars down too low, then that changes that scenario. But when it comes to the biome, which is what you're talking about, so our GI tract is made up of bacteria, fungi, viruses. They're all a part of that. They call it the microbiome, and with the viruses in particular, they call it the virome. And with the recent stuff that's going on, I've been teaching a lot on that about just the hundreds of millions of viruses we have inside of us already that are part of a it's like a force. It's basically like a rich forest.
So it's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. In fact, the chemicals that our brain sends down, the hormones and the communication requires that biome to have it affect our GI tract properly. The bacteria, the good bacteria, and the balance that we have there creates a symbiotic relationship so that the message that comes becomes magnified and actually has a good end result. When you lose that microbiome, the bacteria, the viruses, the fungi, or becomes out of balance, then we start to see symptoms. So leaky gut's example of a smaller example of the ulcers. We have little holes and you start absorbing things you shouldn't and your immune system starts to react. Or what can happen is if you get little holes in your gut and parts of bacteria, lipopolysaccharides, start to break off and come through, they shouldn't be on the inside of your body like that. They should be on the lining of the GI tract only. So your immune system will start to attack those things, which can then attack the lining of the interior lining of the digestive tract, or in women, the lining of their female organs. Or we start to see things like autoimmune disorders like Hashimoto's for the thyroid and different disorders. It can happen anywhere in the body. And so it's very, very important to keep those all intact. And you have to do different things to help with that. SIBO is an example of that microbiome starting to grow in the wrong location, because it's not supposed to be through our entire digestive tract. The upper digestive system is really for breaking food down and absorbing it. And the lower digestive system is where the bacteria does its work and feeds off all that and then creates a different environment for waste elimination and reabsorption of key minerals and nutrients there as well. So it really is a symbiotic relationship. But perfect example is when we start to have stress, it can alter the amount of stomach acid that our stomach produces, changing the pH of the small intestine where everything is supposed to be broken down and absorbed, and then the bacteria that's in the large intestine can start to migrate up. It's kind of like if people from the south, if it all of a sudden started to get to 120, 130 degrees, or let's say it this way, people from Mexico are used to 80 degrees every day. All of a sudden, they start to see Canada become 80 degrees every day. That's a temperature they're comfortable with, so they will move up to Canada to the normal temperature. So that's kind of the same thing with the pH. It's an environment that's pleasing to the microbiome that's in your larger GI tract, and it starts to migrate up. But the problem is that's where we're supposed to be absorbing nutrients, so it can block absorption. And that's what we see with SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth.
And to treat SIBO would be like a low FODMAP diet. Maybe you can look that up, friends. That's a totally different diet. You got Candida, and Candida isn't just for women. That's right.
No.
I mean, that's like a high yeast value in your body, excess
yes.
sugar in your diet. And what friends don't know is maybe you're not someone who, you know, opens up the bag of sugar and downs it, you know, but maybe you have a high carb diet, which breaks down to sugar. So talk about maybe some of the symptoms of Candida.
Well, some of the symptoms are Candida mimics everything. So the thing is, it disrupts the digestive system. So in one person, it can cause depression. In another person, it can cause fibromyalgia-type symptoms. It can cause irritability, sleep disorders. So it really is something that mimics everything because of how it disrupts your internal system. The byproduct of Candida flourishing are increased acids in the body. So the more acids you have in the body, acid's another sign of inflammation. So depending on what area of the body it's affecting, inflammation will cause damage to that area. And that has to be taken out through the kidneys. So we can start to see a lot of kidney dysfunction when that happens. So, and then anything that compromises our ability to detoxify is when we start to really feel symptoms, and then everything becomes harder.
You know, it's interesting because it goes back to, you've been on so many times, it goes back to, you know, start with cutting way back on sugar, alcohol, that kind of a thing. And then, excuse me, try to find a balanced diet, limit your portions, that kind of thing. And let's talk kombucha. We just got about a minute and a half here. But now that, you know, you always say fermented foods are so good for the gut. Like in my situation, kombucha makes me very sick because I have mold toxicity. So talk about why kombucha would be good for one, but not another.
So the same example as the SIBO. So fermented food, low FODMAP is low fermented food. So with the majority of the population, they need fermented food and they need that bacteria. So if it's growing in the right area, we found out in recent research that it doesn't even have to stay in that area. It just has to do a drive-by, if you will, and pass the other bacteria. Just the presence of that going through your system seems to excite, if you will, the bacteria that's there locally in the large intestine, and it starts to flourish. It's kind of like that, like they're seeing their buddy go by and waving, and they get all excited.
Yay! This stuff happens in your body, just saying.
It does. Look, it's lactobacillus. Bifidus, hello!
He's a real geek when you think about it. So, but so fermented foods, sauerkraut, would that be pickles, kombucha,
yes.
that kind of thing? Okay, we're going to pause here, but when we come back, I want you to explain why someone who's got mold toxicity can't do kombucha. What's the problem with that? So, because it's interesting, you know, maybe you drink it for a while and you feel good, and then all of a sudden you start to feel really bad. That was me. And it isn't a one-size-fits-all. It's just so good to know your body. What
yes.
are your issues? Hugely important. And I hope that helps, friend, and I see a few other questions coming in. You can text them in. That might be ideal. 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Somebody. Wow, I love that song too. Thanks for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. We've got Dr. Troy Spurl in studio. We get him on once a month to talk about health and the healing process. We opened the show talking gut and brain health. Someday I'll learn that we just need more time. because this has been really, really good. And I see some texts coming in and some calls coming in. We're going to try to get to those, but I promised. So we were talking about gut health and how most people will benefit from fermented foods. And you explained before the break why that is. But that's not the case for everybody. In my situation, you know, and I know I represent quite a few people, it's coming out, you know, more and more people who are dealing with mold toxicity. They have a condition where they can't process when they walk into a building. And long story short, kombucha contributes to the issue. Why is that?
Well, first of all, it won't for everyone. So not everyone with mold will have an issue with kombucha.
Interesting.
But there are different factors there. So one with the mold issue, it's a challenge in clearing out the mycotoxins that come from the mold. So many of us get exposed to it, and the toxins are there, but we can escort them out of our body much easier. So that's one thing. But when you bring in bacteria, they naturally will displace mold. So you liberate mold that's there. So if you have a negative reaction and it stays a negative reaction, that's one thing. But many people will have a negative reaction and then be fine 3 weeks later into the program. And that's a sign.
Does it help them then?
It helps them then, yes. So it can. So some people will actually get help because it's displacing it. These are more people that aren't in an active mold environment. Hmm. So if you're in an active mold environment, if you're in an active mold environment and you're taking kombucha, it will just stir it up.
Right, okay.
And you never get rid of it. The other side of it is you have to eventually get your stomach acid back to a normal place in the pH. And earlier when we were talking about the fungus and candida, the yeast, sometimes all it takes is that stomach acid, which your mental stress and or other body stressors can set up a scenario where you're not producing enough stomach acid. And then it takes one piece of fruit for that yeast to feed off of, and that's it. So So people could be eating pretty healthy and still having yeast and candida issues because of a stressful encounter, lifestyle, or some other form of stress. And we've talked about all of those scenarios. It can be anything from lack of sleep to just, like in your scenario, Lyme is a huge stressor to the body. And then not sleeping, or people with stressors just in life, whatever it may be, can all add up to that mind-body, mind-gut challenges, which then has you have problems getting rid of the excess fungal components. So the probiotics that are in there, and there's a little bit of sugar in there as well. So a lot of people who have the mold who don't react well to kombucha, the little bit of sugar can feed candida, yeast, and fungus. And oftentimes that goes with mold and it goes with SIBO. So if you have either one of those scenarios, the fungal component can sneak in there and feed off the sugar that's in kombucha. Because there's about 2 to 3 grams in just the straight up kombucha with sugar. But in some of the flavored ones, there can be as much as 6 grams of sugar, which doesn't sound a lot compared to, you know, Coca-Cola, but.
Right, exactly. Well, and it's been years since I've tried it. Maybe I've made enough progress. I can try it just a little bit. No?
Yeah.
Hog wild. Here
we
go.
I'd like to see that. Maybe on a Friday night or
exactly.
something.
I got to schedule it. Yeah. What are you doing tonight?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to take a few sips of kombucha, so I got to clear my schedule.
Yes.
All right. Anyway, moving on. Okay. Does Dr. Troy have opinion? This came in the text line on soy lecithin, or sunflower lecithin. Client who swears by it for mood stabilizer for her husband.
Yeah. So I would go with sunflower lecithin. It's a cleaner product. Most soy is. A bit of an issue nowadays, but I love lecithin because it is it is basically where we get choline from. Choline comes from eggs, and it helps methylate the body. So
How do you get sunflower? Is it an oil? Is it a capsule?
Powder.
Oh,
yeah, it's a powder. So you can mix it in drinks, and they do have them in capsules and stuff too. But most of it comes in a little bucket, if you will.
Interesting.
And it is really, really good for you.
Hmm.
And I think I mentioned once, I had a patient years ago who came in and she was told by her doctor, she went down and got assessed, and they said, it looks like you're going to have MS, but you don't have it yet. So come back when you have it, because that's what they know how to treat. And when she was with us, we found that when we supplied her with choline, which is what sunflower lecithin is, it's choline, which is a methylator. Methylators help your liver, they help your brain, and they help your heart, protect your heart. And so she was on crutches or in a wheelchair, and when we just gave her the choline, she was able to start walking and then running again, and now runs marathons as long as she takes that. And so there is no MS because
because you filled the gap, you plugged the hole.
Yes. So when the liver requires choline, the best source in the body for choline is in the myelin sheath of the nerves. So it's made of choline. And so this was a theory we put out maybe 20 years ago at the clinic, and it's starting to pan out that some of the people who are pre-MS, if you will, really just have a choline deficiency that needs to be filled because of our toxic world, and it'll manifest with liver problems, some heart problems, or with anxiety or depression. So I love choline. Now, there's three types of choline, and the alpha GPC is the best form, but I'll use the other two as well because they're more cost-effective. The only thing is the barbiturate, which I have to be careful how I say that one. I always mix it up, but it is the, if you do too much of it, it can start to affect the cardiovascular system. So some people can only do that one for a certain time period. Mm. So you shouldn't necessarily do that one for years and years and years. But it works great. Many of us are deficient. And so I have some theories as far as why so many people are starting to develop problems with that, but we see a lot of significance. And a high percentage of my patients that I found really need the choline have egg sensitivities and egg allergies and egg reactions. And so we're trying to discern
through
that.
And choline is in the eggs.
Choline's high in eggs, yeah. And I think part of it is how we've kind of mixed some of our foreign ingredients, like with different shots, whether it be the flu or vaccine shots. They put a lot of egg in there, and they're asking our immune system to attack the viruses that are in those shots.
Wow.
So anytime we put something else in there, our immune system tends to react there too. So that's a theory right now.
Interesting.
It's not been studied out, but that's something I've seen in my patient population.
Who is the guy that wrote The End of Alzheimer's?
That is Dr. Bredesen.
And was he the one who kind of coined the phrase about plugging the holes? And he was talking about ending Alzheimer's, but saying there are how many holes? There's so many.
37 holes in the roof, kind of thing. Yeah.
As far as reasons people get Alzheimer's, and if you can identify those holes, which they've been identified, and plug them. But we all have different holes that need to be plugged. And you and I did a show a while back on just basically that we all have holes that need to be plugged. And I just think, you know, this is one of the reasons I'm so passionate. You know, this is why preventative care matters so much, because you have deficiencies and you think, I'm fine, but you might not be fine. And if you can find out those things and plug the holes with some preventative supplements, dietary changes, managing your stress, which could make a massive difference in your life. Wow. Quick question here. Hey, you two awesome friends, which that's how you should begin every text, everybody, because that made my day. What are your thoughts on 5-HTP?
So 5-HTP is a precursor to serotonin, and so it can have benefit. However, there's a caveat with that because it will get converted to serotonin, and given enough B6 and some other things, it can get converted to melatonin. So there's a lot of potential value there. However, what we have seen is that there's also the potential for people who have too much stress in their life, which can deplete your serotonin levels, and anyone who has an active infection going on, it will actually convert the 5-HTP, the tryptophan, into quinolinic acid. So quinolinic acid is toxic to the brain. So, and that has to do more with tryptophan. 5-HTP is a safer source for that. So I want to be very clear. There's a difference between 5-HTP, which is 5-hydroxytryptophan, and then tryptophan. If you need 5-HTP to feel better, then there's likely a stress or infection scenario depleting your tryptophan levels, or you're just not getting it dietarily. Mm. So it is good. It is definitely a better choice than straight up tryptophan for most people. And I always like to get to the root cause, which is identify the stress. There's three things, stress, infection, or immune activation. That includes inflammation. So we look for infection. We clean up digestive inflammation. That's the most common. And then we manage stress, and then you eventually don't need the 5-HTP.
We're going to do a whole show, I think, on managing stress, because that was one of my questions, but I want to make sure we get all these texts that are coming in. But when we're talking about the gut-brain connection, I've just been reading articles, listening to podcasts lately, and it keeps coming up. Managing stress is a massive health factor.
Yes.
And you think about the fear that's being parroted. I mean, the enemy just fear cells. I hate to say it, but it just does.
Yep.
And the stress that that's putting on people then who are under their roof with their kids and trying to work at home. And then you've got to, our battle is not against flesh and blood. It's against principalities. If you're a believer, you got a target on your back. So the enemy's trying to get you stressed. But God always, as you start opened up, you know, there's a way, always a way,
yeah.
Somehow, some way to manage your stress in a way that builds up your immunities. And boy, I care so much about that. And I know we're going to find that way together. This dear listener texts in, do probiotics really help the gut? What do you think?
Yes, they really do. They really, yeah. Really do. But
yes.
Yes. In the right environment again.
Okay.
So someone will take it and notice instant results, and other people will take it, not notice a thing.
And not all probiotics are the same.
They're not all the same at all. So
yeah, you want clean ones. And how do they know, good brands? I mean,
generally speaking, if they are in the physician's desk reference, the company I'm saying, or there's some level of branding on it that has other third-party sources that have given it a clean bill of health. That's what you're looking for.
Okay, very good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Dr. Troy, how do you find out what your gut issues are? Lots of tests, or what steps can I take to start figuring it out? I'm not a doctor, but I play one on radio. You hear that from me all the time. So I'm going to say start by eliminating some things. But go ahead, Doc.
That was my answer.
Okay, yay. I just got to do that once in a while.
So the cheapest way is to fast and do an elimination diet. So you basically fast for 2 days to 3 days, and then you start to bring in one food at a time. And if you feel better at the end of the 3 days and you add a food in, you pay attention and you document it. So that's how you first find out. Then there's a slew of testing. There's all kinds of different tests for digestive function to see anything from food sensitivities to infections. And then there's physical tests. At the clinic, we'll actually do a physical exam to see how the muscles are functioning and how the intestinal tract is functioning. If you push, you can do this at home too. If you push on your abdomen, you should not have pain anywhere in the abdomen, even if you just ate 20 minutes ago. So if you have pain, if you push on your abdomen, something's not right.
So much to learn. We're going to keep learning together. We're going to pause here as we go to break. I want you to read or hear this from a dear listener. Hi, Susie. Here's a pressing question. How do you discern what's spiritual, what's physical? Oppression versus physical. We're triune beings. One area affects the others. That is so true. She says, it reminds me of the Greek word sozo, which means saved, healed, delivered. The Lord does it all. That is so good. Maybe we'll touch on that. And we've got quite a few other texts coming in. Another one is, how long does a good fast look for someone with Crohn's disease or looking to improve their condition? A day? 2 days? We'll tackle that as well. Talking to Dr. Troy Spurl. He's CEO and founder of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, and we will be back in a minute. You hear that song, There Will Be Healing, Hallelujah. That day is coming, friends. And so I don't even know who said it first. I know Mark Batterson says it, but lots of others have said it as well. We work like it depends on us. We pray like it all depends on God. That goes for everything, I would say. But we're talking about health and the healing process. Talking to Dr. Troy Spurl, we've got him in studio. We'll get him here once a month to talk about your health. It matters so much. And don't you want to just show up for life feeling your best? I want that for you. I want that for me as well. And this dear listener says, here's a pressing question. How do you discern what's spiritual and what's physical? What's, oppression? What's physical? We're triune beings. One area affects the others. Reminds me of the Greek word sozo, which means saved, healed, and delivered. And the Lord does it all. What do you want to say to that?
Yeah, that is a good loaded question and very, very good comment and observation, because that has been my area I've been working on for myself. Mm-hmm. And so this is what I'm going to do, because just especially in times like this, I had a quote that was relayed to me that I loved, but it was incomplete. So I finished off that quote, and I'm trying to wrap my mind around what's going on with everything here. And when we talk today about just stewarding in what the brain-gut connection and what that truly means, it kind of, I wrote down some thoughts here. So actually, I want to read that, because what the conclusion I came to and have come to when it comes to physical component, when God made us, it's good. It's a communication thing. When we communicate mentally, chemically, and physically as God intended, we're in good health. When you bring in our relationship with God and we communicate with God as he intended, we're in good spiritual health, because he will help us with discernment.
Interesting.
And so the conclusion I came to when it comes to the pandemic stuff that's going on and just in health in general and the world we're living in right now is there was two words. Number one, it's very compromised. And a lot of systems are compromised. That doesn't mean it's black and white and the whole thing is bad. It's just compromised, and we need to discern through that. The quote I heard was, because there's a lot of conspiracy stuff going on and everything out there, and I liked it because it said, don't ascribe to malice, the conspiracy stuff, what can be ascribed to incompetence and bad incentives. And that's very true. There's a lot of people who just unfortunately are incompetent at what they do, or they're being incentivized incorrectly.
Wow.
And so the second part, it's incomplete. So the second part of that is, this doesn't mean evil doesn't exist. It just coexists with incompetence and greed.
Wow.
And so that's what we're up against as we're trying to discern through things here, that there is a compromised system and systems in our body and around the world as far as how things are working. And there is evil, mm-hmm. but there's also the individual greed, and there's the incompetence part of it. So we have to discern. The only way we can discern is go through truth as we know it, which is Scripture and our communications with God. So when I'm trying to discern what is physical, chemical, or mental versus spiritual, I am measuring it the way I know how and how God made us and how he intended it as best as I know. And then in direct communication with God. And when it comes to stewarding in, the definition of stewardship is really good. Good stewards believe in sustainability. They understand that they are building value, not for themselves, but for their customers, their members, their shareholders, their future generations, whatever that looks like. And a biblical worldview of stewardship can be consciously defined as utilizing and managing all resources God provides for the glory of God. And that's a key statement, because it's got to be for the glory of God. Mm. And then that helps you with the discernment and the betterment of his creation. So when you put it into that context of, does it honor God and is it making his creation better? It helps you with discernment. Then you can start to see what's been compromised. And that tells you that, like a whole system, like our healthcare system, many doctors will tell you it's compromised right now. It doesn't mean the people that are working within it are bad. It doesn't mean that the whole thing is bad. It's got a level of compromise where certain things aren't working well. And people will argue about those details all the time, but the arguing doesn't do anything. That's not what God wants us to do, to steward in his vision for us. And to actually help these people, it looks very different when we apply Scripture.
Amen. You know, I often say heaven knows who's who in the zoo. You know, God knows whose heart is bent towards him, who fears God, who he can look at all of the masses of humanity and know whose hearts are bent towards him, those who are fighting for justice and truth. And, you know, on an individual level, Scripture talks about let peace rule and reign in your heart. And I think, friend, you texted in, how do you discern, you know, between spiritual. I think when you lose your peace, you got to retrace your steps and find it again. First and foremost, I don't think you'll even discern physically until you're first discerning spiritually. But I love the parallel, because when our systems get compromised, if we don't address it, more and more systems get compromised. And you can get overwhelmed by that when you look at the systemic issues all around us.
Yeah.
But as one person, we do what God gives us to do, and we trust him with the rest. He's going to make it right someday.
Absolutely. And I think things can sneak in there, because I know so many people that when they get an inflamed GI tract from food they're eating, they mentally become lazy. And because they're literally being shut down, their system is being shut down.
They lose their motivation.
They lose their motivation, which includes, I've had patients say to me, I'm too tired to pray. I'm too wiped out, exhausted to pray. Their motivation to pray decreases. That's a direct causality, if you will, from a poor inflammatory diet disconnecting them from God. Mm-hmm. Or just the idea of opening their Bible to read the word becomes almost too high of a task. I've had people actually express that, and it's just an extreme form of depression. It's depressed function to the point of not wanting to connect.
Food is supposed to be medicine. It's supposed to fuel you. So I want you to imagine you're already kind of riding that kind of crash sense, and then you eat more sugar, more carbs, and you crash worse in your afternoon. What if, just based on whatever it is you need, you had some protein, you had some healthy food, and you felt the bump in motivation, in clarity? I mean, food is medicine, and it's energy. And if we could get motivated to do that, to try to take some good steps, that would be amazing. David writes in, and let me just ask you this. We have a few minutes left, and I'm asking you on the spot on the live show, so you're good at saying no, so say no if you need to. But can I keep you a few minutes longer just to try to tackle some of these texts? Do you have a few minutes after?
No. Yes, I do. I just wanted to see what that felt like.
Yeah. How did it feel?
Weird. Yeah. Didn't feel right.
I don't accept.
I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah. I feel like apologizing.
That's right.
Away.
Kim, lock the door. We're keeping him here. All right. So David writes in, my grandson has high protein in his urine. No one seems to know why. What things should they be looking for?
Okay. Let me think about that one. Because high protein can be a couple different things. So it kind of, there's a lot of other scenarios there. So generally speaking, we want to make sure that other factors are okay, like the creatinine. And if he's an athlete, and it depends on the age, but if there's any type of muscle wasting or inflammatory stuff going on, we'd have to address that. There are different labs I'd want to look at, like LDH. It's an enzyme that tells us that there might be some challenges there with the muscle. But people who exercise and then don't, and then the muscle kind of breaks off and flakes off and you don't get it clear properly, that can be a problem. They generally have some issues there with some type of pain or delayed, like a fibromyalgia type of scenario.
So, interesting.
And with that, it can be anything from a GI inflammatory stuff to sleep disorders. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, if the traditional medical world can't find it, it means it's not any one of the serious diseases, which is good. And it means it's generally more functional, which would put it more in our world of checking the GI for inflammatory components. One of the most common reasons we see that is a buildup of acids in the body, oxalates in particular, that can come from mold, fungus, Roundup or glyphosate toxicity, as well as uric acid, which can be from insulin resistance. So the other side of that is there's a whole bunch we have to know about. Does he eat a lot of protein or not a lot of protein? And so where's the protein coming from would be my
interesting
way I would look at it.
Okay.
to identify what you do next. But that one, those ones intrigue me, but we need a lot more information to be able to get the specifics.
Okay. I want to get this anonymous one. We've got about a minute to answer it. And then, friends, okay. I see a number of texts, Linda, April, Rhonda, Carol, and a few others. We're going to try to tackle those as quickly as we can after the live show's over. Here's one. How long does a good fast look or take for someone with Crohn's disease looking to improve their condition? A day, 2 days?
So with Crohn's, I would make sure you do it under the supervision of someone who is used to doing fasting, because the system's already compromised a little bit. And so that we've seen fast all the way up to 40 days, which I do not want you to do for Crohn's. But I can't remember the gentleman who wrote the book. He fasted and oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I can't remember his name. But long story short, you want to ease into it, but work with someone who does well. See how you feel in a day or two. And it kind of depends on a lot of things. If you already have lost a lot of weight, then you don't want to lose a ton of weight, but you got to clean things out. So generally speaking, with Crohn's, it means you have to do it longer to get a true healing. But you want to support the system in a different way as well with, I'm calling it dirt, Jordan Rubin, his book.
Support it with Jordan Rubin.
Jordan Rubin's book.
Not Rubin Sandwiches.
Yes, not Rubin Sandwiches. Yes.
So we got to pop. Well, this is the end of the show, but we're going to keep Dr. Troy on. So if you're listening to the live show, you'll catch the podcast. You want to subscribe, you can do that as well, but we'll have bonus material. A friend with the Crohn's, I want you to also look up Dr. Jill Carnahan. She personally had Crohn's yes. after chemotherapy from cancer, and would you believe self-cured. And so look up Dr. Jill Carnahan/Crohn's. You'll find some good stuff there. Hope you found some encouragement here today, and we will meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Middays with Susie Larson. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. And never miss a show.